You're with us for the morning show as we talk about the U.S. Postal Service. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So new polling suggests Americans overwhelmingly support a congressional appropriation for the Postal Service. The agency is struggling amid the pandemic with a steep drop in mail volume, and it's asked Congress for $75 billion to avoid running out of cash by September 30th. Do you send letters through the mail? If so, to whom do you write to? Does your business rely on the Postal Service? Should the government do a bailout? We're at 800-642-1234. Jacob Bogage is a business reporter for The Washington Post. He's been covering the financial plight of the U.S. Postal Service. Jacob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Van Derven is here, a retired mail carrier who worked for USPS for 35 years. He's president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers. Scott, welcome to you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's start with you, Scott. Tell us about what your job was like 35 years as a mail carrier.
Well, you know, I enjoyed it quite a bit, you know, and when I retired, there's many things that I missed about it. And mostly it was the customer interaction I had. We are fortunate to do the business of the American people. And so I would be on the porch of, you know, Americans all across the city of Milwaukee where I worked. And I watched their children grow up. I looked at their gardens. I know that they plant those gardens for someone, and I think it was me. And all those sorts of things. And really, it was just the interaction that I had with my folks.
I would imagine that those interactions would be short, but over time, little things add up.
Oh, they certainly do. So, you know, going back to the 35 years, I still remember a lot of the people who lived in a particular house and what their mailbox looked like, and you just dedicate those things to memory and go on. So later in my career, I had more condominiums on the lakefront in the city of Milwaukee, but it was still the same. They were just people, and, you know, you participated in their life. It's a very interesting thing.
So, Jacob, last month the Postal Service announced it will lose $13 billion this year due to the pandemic, and it may not be able to make payroll later this year. What is going on?
A lot of things are going on, and they're all coming to a head because of the coronavirus. For years, we've seen a decline in first-class mail in the Postal Service. Those are letters, the greeting cards that you exchange with your grandparents, bills. They're, and Scott, weigh in and tell me if I'm wrong. They're clean, they're light, they're easy to process and transport. The Postal Service makes the highest profit margin on those mail products, and the volume of those products have been decreasing for years and years and years. And now with the coronavirus, we're seeing, the economy all over the country is shut down. And so we're seeing further volume decreases, which really just takes the legs out of a Postal Service that was already struggling financially. And so it needs this financial lifeline from Congress, and the White House is unwilling to extend that aid.
I would imagine, Scott, that this is very concerning to you as retired from this business that, you know, if you can call it a business, but such a service to the American people. What is your take on the financial trouble right now?
And you're very correct to distinguish between it being a business and a service to the American people. It being enshrined in the Constitution to bind the nation together and all those things are what the Postal Service is really all about. I know there's a lot of our people out there that says, oh, it needs to run like a business. Well, if that were the case, then every American at every address in the nation would not receive the same service at the same price, which is what a service provides. So when you see that the revenues are steeply declining because of the pandemic, we're talking maybe 30 to 50% of the revenues, depending, because businesses who are not operating are unable to mail. But we still stand ready to aid in the recovery when these things actually turn around. You know, small businesses need us for their billing, to get the revenue stream going, of course, and to mail out packages and whatever their products are in a reliable network which the Postal Service can provide.
We're talking with Scott Van Derven, who is a retired mail carrier, worked for the Post Office Postal Service 35 years. Jacob Bogage is here, reporter for The Washington Post, covering the financial troubles. Looking at the future of the Postal Service in our country, with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Judy in Ripon. Hi, Judy.
Hi, good morning. I am a small business in central Wisconsin that relies heavily on the Postal Service. I do about $5,000 a week in sales over the internet and using the post office as my primary shipping partner. So we were pressured heavily by Etsy to provide free shipping. So I increased my prices slightly, but for the most part, I am eating a ton of shipping costs. Now, I want to know if it's true that Amazon, if there's anything truthful, I don't believe there ever is from Trump, but if this is truthful, what he's saying is that Amazon has negotiated such low rates that if the post office is losing money through Amazon, are they passing it on to small businesses? Because there has just been a recent rate increase that hurt. And so I was just wondering if there's truth to that, and are the small businesses expected then to eat that?
Judy, thank you for that question. Jacob, could you field that? What is the Amazon effect here?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Judy, that's a great question, and thanks for that. No, there is no truth to what the president is saying in regard to Amazon and the way it negotiates package prices. Every package delivery the Postal Service makes is required by law to do two things. One, cover the cost of delivering that package, and two, pay for some portion of overhead for the Postal Service's budget. The Postal Service cannot, by law, deliver a package at a loss. So it doesn't matter what Amazon is negotiating, whether or not those are above or below the rates that the Postal Service would charge anybody else. Those service agreements would never be approved if the Postal Service couldn't A, cover the cost of every single delivery, and B, cover the cost of a certain portion of overhead. Now, those service agreements, not just with Amazon, but with any third-party shipper, with UPS, with FedEx, with DHL, those are all confidential and proprietary. So we don't know what's in them, but we do know the law that governs the Postal Service. And that's just the case. A, it has to cover the cost of delivery, and B, it's got to cover a proportion of overhead. So no, Amazon is not swindling the Postal Service when it makes deliveries.
Scott, can you give us a sense of what the overhead looks like and what goes into getting a package from point A to point B?
Well, sure. So on the Amazon, I mean, things show up at our door on pallets. The clerks separate them, and then they are sent out to delivery. They're tracked very intently so that people know where it is in the mail stream at all times. If you want to, of course, you can set up a text message or whatever to make sure that you know where your package is. FedEx, UPS, and DHL, of course, do the same thing with their various smart posts or some ideation of that term. So we are the last mile for all of those carriers.
And we're going to get into what last mile means here in just a moment with Scott Van Derven, who is president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers. Jacob Bogage here, a Washington Post reporter, and your thoughts as well on the Postal Service. What does it get it right? What is it getting wrong? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the financial straits of the U.S. Postal Service and what the future may hold. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The agency said it will lose $13 billion this fiscal year due to the economic downturn resulting from the pandemic. President Trump has voiced his opposition to the request, saying that USPS should raise rates to generate more revenue. Do you agree? What services do you rely on? Has the pandemic changed how you feel about postal delivery? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. We're talking with Jacob Bogage, who is a Washington Post journalist, and Scott Van Derven, who is a retired mail carrier, worked for 35 years with USPS. Scott, where we left off there was on last mile delivery. So the final delivery, you know, when a package is shipped by a private company like FedEx or UPS, the final delivery is made by a U.S. postal carrier. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. So the private carrier will process it through their delivery network or their processing network, drop it off at a post office based on the zip codes, the proprietary and ubiquitous zip code that everyone has. And then we take it that last mile basically because we're already going there. So it happens both in an urban setting and even more importantly in the rural setting where it is just not economically feasible for those private carriers to go out there with single packages and that sort of thing, whereas we are already going there with the other things in our mail mix.
So it should make sense that this is the most efficient way to get that package there, especially to that remote mailbox. But, Jacob, is this an expensive way for companies to do this? Or do you think that, you know, what do we see going on with this last mile delivery?
There's actually there's a weird relationship between the Postal Service and these other third-party shippers. And I've had experts on the phone explain this to me as using a term called co-opetition, a mix of cooperation and competition. The cooperation part of it is the last mile part, right? It is cheap. You know, the Postal Service is going out there anyway with a mail mix. It doesn't make sense for, I'm going to use UPS as an example, it doesn't make sense for UPS to haul all the way out into a rural location to deliver a single package. So they cooperate with the Postal Service through these negotiated package deals where they will say, we'll give you a certain, you know, we'll guarantee a certain kind of volume. And in exchange, you'll give us a better rate. Again, that rate still has to cover the price of delivery from overhead. So that's the cooperation part. The competition part is who is going to send, you know, who are you going to use to send this package in the first place? Are you going to use, you know, the Postal Service? Like we had Judy, who owns a small business earlier, call in and mention she relies heavily on the Postal Service. So if she has to send a package to a customer, who is she going to use? Is she going to use the Postal Service, UPS, or FedEx? Who's going to be, you know, the everything but the last mile? And that's the competition part of it. Package delivery has been a huge area of growth for the Postal Service. And you know, they pose a threat in terms of market share to other third-party shippers.
How fierce is that competition?
Pretty fierce. In terms of the Postal Service in general, packages make up just 5% of the Postal Service's volume, 30% of revenue. So it's a business line they care about deeply. And then among other third-party shippers, Amazon, UPS, and FedEx are kind of the big three out there afterward. Amazon, by 2022, at least before this pandemic, was on pace to deliver more packages than UPS or FedEx. UPS and FedEx deliver, you know, each of them about 3 to 5 billion packages a year. This is like a $1.7 trillion market. It's huge. And so any little inch of market share is potentially hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, let's take another call now. Carol is joining us from Ontarioville, Illinois. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Kate. Nice to hear your voice. Lovely. Yeah, he touched on something, and forgive me, I was doing something else. He said, because what I was told, we're right outside of Chicago, 30 miles west, 9 million metro area, part of it, is that they told me that, that those bulk mailings where you get your coupons for cleaners and, you know, the supermarket and all that stuff contributes heavily to their income. Because I really appreciate being able to put something in the mail. Like, it's usually cards or occasional letters. But, you know, it's I'd hate to see that go. But as far as raising, you know, revenues for, you know, that doesn't always work. Yeah. From my studies. And, you know, we've had severe problems with the newer carriers of insurance premiums, finding them under the snow. You know, it's always something that you just, you know, it's not an option. And yeah, you have a double thing, you know, when they're coming, but still, that we were new to this medical insurance, so we weren't sure. And
sure. Yeah. And getting a piece of mail lost is certainly, and if it's a really important piece of mail, that can have consequences. Scott, can you feel this, you know, in terms of the bulk mailing and the circulars that come to mailboxes, is that a revenue generator?
Well, certainly, as you might think of it as being the commercials you might see on television. The first class mail, as Jacob mentioned, is declining some with the advent of different ways of communicating. And, of course, a lot of companies are prodding you to use online bill pay and that sort of thing. But it's still very secure, and we are the hard copy specialists, as it were. But, yes, those advertising circulars are very important to small businesses who are able to target their message to a particular neighborhood, even a particular street if they were so inclined, and it makes perfect sense for them, and it is something physical and tactile that you have in your hand. It's not like an email that you could just go ahead and delete all of them without ever opening them. You actually hold it in your hand, and you are going to see it. So it has excellent value both to the mailer and to the Postal Service as a revenue stream.
We're talking with Scott Van Derven, president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers. Jacob Bogage is here, a journalist for The Washington Post, who has been reporting on the Postal Service with your questions along the way and how you use the post office today. We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Louie now in Genesee. Hi, Louie.
Hi. I wanted to comment that for years, the Postal Service has been profitable, but it has not been able to meet the unusual requirement set upon them by the legislature that that they have an unusual amount of funds in their retirement fund. And so they can be profitable each year as a working organization, but they have a hard time meeting that unusual amount that they have to have in their retirement fund.
Well, Louis, let's explore that with Jacob. What do retirement benefits look like that to taking care of Postal Service workers and the insurance and union?
So this is where Postal Service gets really weird. There's a way around it. It just gets really weird. The Postal Service has to do something that basically no other government organization or even private company would contemplate ever doing. They have to prepay their retiree health care benefits years and years and years into the future. You see some estimates that say something like up to 75 years in the future, which is not exactly accurate, but it's a good way of thinking about it. And so the Postal Service, on its operations of just delivering the mail, annually almost breaks even. For years, they made money until kind of the internet started maturing and different ways of communicating came online. But before that, they made a ton of money. And then afterward, they kind of broke even. And then in 2006, Congress passes this legislation that requires them to prepay these retiree benefits. And it's in the order of, you know, sometimes $5 or $6 billion a year. And since going 13 years back now, so since 2006, the Postal Service has run operating deficits in large part because of these payments that are required to be made every year. So the Postal Service has $160 billion dollars worth of debt. $119 billion worth of debt, of that debt, is from these prepaid retirement benefits,
so,
which they can't make the payments on anymore.
So they can't make the payments on anymore, but it sounds like if they would amend those, that particular piece of it, that may help solve this financial crisis.
A little bit. For the first several years after this legislation was passed in 2006, the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, people call it paella, like the dish with shrimp and rice. For the first few years afterward, they were able to make these payments. So they kind of have a lump of money sitting there that they can draw from to pay out retirement benefits, but they can't use it to fund their operations.
We're talking with Jacob Bogage, a Washington Post reporter who's been covering the post office's financial challenges. Scott Van Derven here as well, a retired mail carrier. And you, should the government bail out the U.S. Postal Service? Do you think our country would be better off if the post office were to shut down? What ideas do you have for helping keep it afloat? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about the plight of the post office. The USPS comprises nearly a quarter of the federal workforce, handling 142 billion pieces of mail each year. We have Scott Van Derven, president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers, and we have Washington Post business reporter Jacob Bogage, who has been covering the financial challenges. Let's go back to the phones now. Jim is joining us from Newport Township this morning. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. I was going to comment that to me personally, and I think to some others also, that the I surely hope that the USPS stays in business, because it's one of our very last vestiges of long-distance communication that provides privacy, because pretty much all the electronic communication is not that secure in that respect. But at the same time, I think the USPS has to get with the contemporary world in the sense of the service it provides. Like, for instance, what retail business would be in existence today that closes at 5 p.m., on weekdays, noon on Saturday, and is completely closed on Sunday? I think the USPS needs to partner with entities like Office Max and Office
and other businesses. Jim, I want to field this to Scott here. How can we see the U.S. Postal Service modernize and provide its services more broadly to people?
Right. So we do have an excellent website, and like I say, the tracking is excellent as well. As far as retail hours, those were unfortunate byproduct of the consolidation from the 2012 through 2015, when the Postal Service was trying to shrink its footprint just a little bit in order to survive, which took away some of the convenience. And I appreciate the caller wanting to come to the post office after his working day. And I understand that completely. But unfortunately, that was the byproduct of trying to still maintain as much processing capacity and retail capacity amid the fall of and decline of revenue.
Jim, thanks. Let's bring in Tammy now in Onalaska. Hi, Tammy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I really would like to bring forward the discussion regarding not only the fact that it's our last long-distance communication like the previous caller, but that it also is the most secure. And if some of us as the population and many of us don't have computers, even during this COVID-19 time, we have no access to computer because the libraries are closed.
Tammy, really?
And I know that.
Yeah, go ahead.
then also, as far as legal documents, if you, there's just so many things that hard copy is essential for
yeah.
the population.
Tammy, thank you so much for that. Jacob, communication in the digital age, you know, the post office is something that people, it's a somewhat of an equalizer, is it not?
It's huge. And there are, I think it's, 10% of the United States doesn't have access to broadband. It's a tremendous lifeline to communities that don't have that kind of access, to maybe to seniors, to low-income communities, to rural communities. It's very, very important for folks like that. And that's why when we talk about the debate over funding, you're starting to see pressure kind of ratchet up on Republicans in Congress, at least according to my reporting, because they understand that the folks who would be most hurt from an interruption in service from the Postal Service are folks in districts that lean Republican and more rural districts that don't have the same kind of access to communication tools that some of us do.
Let's bring in Phyllis now in Windsor. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi there. Good morning. I just wanted to say, you know, it's the United States Postal Service. It's a service, you know, and it's supported by taxpayers and by the stamps. I use it. I'm in my 70s now, and I get my prescription drugs through the mail, and I get my CPAP supplies through the mail. So it's kind of a medical lifeline for me, and right now I can still drive, but, you know, I'm not getting younger. And so it's important to me to have these things delivered. I live in the country, and it's just not everything needs to run like a business.
Phyllis, thank you. Scott, this is a medical.
Can you weigh in quickly on that?
I'm sorry?
I just wanted to weigh in quickly on that, but
yeah.
I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
But just very, very quickly, one thing the caller mentioned was that the Postal Service is supported by taxpayers. It is, in fact, not supported by taxpayers. Its operations are funded by the cost and expenses associated with postage. It doesn't take a congressional appropriation. That's why this would be so noteworthy if Congress were to extend these kind of bailout funds. I yield.
Mail volume in our country is decreasing, and we're looking at it with Jacob Bogage, who is here, and we're also looking at with Scott Van Derven, who is president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers. Your thoughts as well. Do you think the post office should be allowed to offer banking services, for instance? What are other ideas do you have for keeping the post office in the black, solvent? Well, still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the future of the U.S. Postal Service this hour as it confronts billions in revenue shortfall. Just an aside here, the letter carriers Stamp Out Hunger food drive, it was scheduled for Saturday. That has been postponed due to the pandemic. It's a drive that started 27 years ago. We have Washington Post reporter Jacob Bogage and retired mail carrier Scott Van Derven, who serves as president of the Wisconsin State Association of Letter Carriers. And Scott, I imagine that it's really hard for you to see that the food drive has been postponed because you've been so involved in it.
Yeah, I was statewide coordinator for many years. In fact, in the 25th anniversary, I painted myself silver in order to promote the drive in the silver anniversary. But look, our communities are so in need, and hunger is such a hidden problem. That's why we feel very bad about having to postpone, because the need is so high. But on the other hand, food banks right now aren't taking donations from outside, like donated cans and boxes and that sort of thing. They don't have the volunteers to sort it. So cash donations to your favorite pantry are certainly going to be appreciated in lieu of our drive.
Well, let's take another call. Mike is in Slinger. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning. My question was just, in this era of change for the Postal Service, which has been going on for decades now, I just feel like UPS and FedEx have flourished doing the same thing, even having more stores in smaller cities than most cities just have one post office. And it just seems like the whole bureaucracy of a government agency is what stands in the way of the post office being successful. They have all the same opportunities to move mail through commercial air flights, and on you know, even FedEx and UPS have fleets of aircraft that are moving their packages, and yet the Postal Service just has been sort of a sinking ship for probably 20, 30 years.
Mike, thanks. Let's get Jacob to respond to that aspect of the competition. Are the competitors flourishing?
Yeah, Mike's not wrong here. FedEx and UPS have done brisk business, and they've adapted with the times. They've been very successful. Amazon, too, has, you know, we think about what Amazon represents and what business lines it's in. You know, it has a line of logistics, you know, delivering its own packages. It delivers about half of its own packages. It's been very successful in this space, too. I would say the difference between the Postal Service and these private sector companies is the universal service obligation the Postal Service has. The Postal Service has to visit 160 million addresses across the United States 6 days a week, no matter if they have a whole lot of mail to deliver or one envelope. You know, they have to go to your door or your P.O. box or your local post office. And that number of addresses expands every year. The reason the cost of sending a letter is so low is because of that universal service obligation, and because the price of sending a letter is linked to inflation and the cost of living. So if you had to send your letter through the mail, or if, imagine, you know, your electric company billing you through the mail, through UPS or Amazon, there's no way they could send you that letter for 55 cents, the cost of the stamp. You know, they'd have to do it for at least, I mean, probably close to $1.50, if not more. And imagine the impact that would have on businesses and individuals across the country if they didn't have that affordable rate that underpins everything else that the Postal Service does.
Well, let's go to another Mike now, who is a retired carrier, a retired rural carrier, Mike in Slinger. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were two Mikes.
Sorry, two Mikes on the line.
Imagine that. I was talking and it wasn't me. I was a rural carrier for 25 years, and I think what we talked about as rural carriers for a long time, again, it's a universal service. We go to the middle of Nevada, we go to the middle of Wisconsin, we go to the middle of Oregon, and I'm sure that there are lots of companies frothing at the bit to take over the mail service in big cities like Chicago, Milwaukee, L.A., New York, where you have 5,000 customers in one building. The profits would be humongous, but they will not provide rural service to the entire country as the Postal Service does. And I participated in that food drive for 25 years. I had to make trips back from the country because my Jeep was full of food. And I really loved working for the Postal Service. The other thing is they would cut the wages and the benefits of all postal employees. That's my comment. Thank you.
Mike, thank you for that description of your job. And Scott, that must make you smile to know that he was having so many canned goods to deliver on that day back to the post office.
Oh, absolutely. Mike, you did a great job. And it's a pleasure hearing about that from you. I know the rural craft had a lot more investment in the food drive because it kind of cut into their day, where a city carrier, it was a little bit easier to bring the stuff right to the post office as opposed to driving in the 20, 30 miles that your route may have encompassed.
Scott, can you give us a sense of how strong the union is for postal workers?
Right. Well, there are four. There's the rural union that Mike is a member of, the letter carriers representing the 5,000 city letter carriers here in Wisconsin and 280,000 across the country. We have the mail handlers who take the transportation of the mail within a mail facility, and then the American Postal Workers Union, who you will see at the counter. They also process the mail and transport it between processing plants in the post offices and that sort of thing. So what we do is honor a contract to make the Postal Service strong. Safety, probably one of the biggest things that we do to make sure that we are operating a safe business. Here in the pandemic, the union is working very closely with postal management to make sure that there's PPE for all the employees and that we have a plan for what to do to sanitize the facilities and all those sorts of things. So I think it's a great cooperative effort that we have with our employer.
Jacob, what is a plan going forward? How do you make the U.S. Postal Service solvent?
Wow, that's the billion-dollar question, right? The White House has put forward a plan, well, not so much a plan, but has authorized this $10 billion loan through the last coronavirus stimulus package. But there are conditions on that loan. And they basically hand over a lot of operating control from the folks who normally run the Postal Service to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and President Trump. Normally, that authority would reside with Congress or the Postal Service Board of Governors. So that's one plan of at least providing some cash to the Postal Service so they don't have to interrupt service. Another plan is a direct appropriation, and we've seen the Postal Service, the Postmaster General, Megan Brennan, come to Congress and ask for what would be kind of an $89 billion relief, revitalization, whatever kind of word you want to use, package. And that would modernize the Postal Service. It would make up for lost revenue because of the pandemic, and it would also relieve a lot of the Postal Service's debt and kind of give them put them back on somewhat level ground to try to make some changes that would allow them to be more successful and more competitive with these third-party shippers.
What would a service interruption look like? Do you have any idea if they can't get the amount of funding?
The two things that my sources have told me that they're most concerned about would be not being able to hit payroll. Payroll for the Postal Service is about $2 billion a month. So they have to have just kind of cash on hand to make that happen. And then it would be service interruptions and kind of the way that would look. I mean, you can't let the mail pile up, so you'd see reduced number of delivery days in a week. Maybe even down to 3 days a week. And you think that doesn't sound bad, but wait till it happens.
Well, we have to leave it there. Jacob, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much. And Scott, thanks for your service.
Yeah, and Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you very much. And Jake, excellent information. You do great research.
Scott Van Derven there, Jacob Bogage, just ahead. It's On Point, and this is the Ideas Network.